Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, October the 1st. Welcome to the month of October. This is day number 274 of 2014. As we do on Wednesday nights, we'll be chatting with our friend Fausto Wirtz. We'll be looking at Latin America issues, and as we also like to do on Wednesday night, we'll talk to an author. And tonight, we have the incredible pleasure and honor of meeting Alina Garcia La Puerta, who's a lady who's written this fascinating book that Fausta introduced me to about 2 or 3 weeks ago. In fact, we talked a little bit about the book 2 or 3 weeks ago, La Belle Creole. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm sure Alina will correct me. I think that means La Bella Criolla. I think that's what that means in Spanish. But anyway, Alina will correct us when she's on. So we'll be getting into all of that tonight. It's a fascinating book. I guess it's been released, a few months ago, and it's just getting great reviews. And we're very proud that another Cuban is doing well, that another Cuban is writing a book. We're always excited to say that. As always, we like you to remember our friends at audible.com. If you're looking for an audiobook, and many people are these days because they're busy, they're running around, busy moms, whatever it may be, you may want to listen to your books. And if you do that, check out our friends at audible.com. We have a link to their website on the show information. Just right under where we have the information about tonight's book, right under that, you'll see the information about audible.com. And if you get yourself a copy of a book, if you order a book, you're going to make my day. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let me say hello to Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. Fausta, how are you? Wait a minute. I hit the wrong button. Forgive me. Fausta, how are you, Fausta?
Doing very well, Silvio. Thank you. How's it going?
Absolutely great. Well, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about this book. You brought it to my attention. You were reading it and completely involved in it. You were really captivated by this book, and we were able to make the arrangements to get the author tonight. But before we get to the author, Alina, tell the audience, I know that you've said this before, but give them another opportunity. I think we have some new listeners tonight. Tell them a little bit about yourself and the blog that you write.
I'm Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. I write on U.S. and Latin American culture, news, and politics at faustasblog.com.
And we've been doing this show with Fausta for several years, as many of you know, and it's one of my favorite shows on Wednesday nights. Now, let's say hello to Alina Garcia La Puerta, and she's the author of the book La Belle Criolla. Am I pronouncing that right, Alina?
Yes, it's La Belle Criolla, exactly.
But in Spanish, wouldn't that be La Bella Criolla?
You're exactly right. It would be La Bella Criolla.
Okay, so
it's
so
just the French version.
You decided to be sophisticated and name her French, right?
Well, no, it's actually, that was a nickname that she had. Some people called her that in France, so that was the inspiration. But yes, it could have been La Bella Criolla. It would have worked just as well.
Just as well, yes. Well, as I was saying, Fausta introduced me to your book. Let me introduce you to Fausta. Hi, Fausta. There's Alina.
Hello.
Alina, it's a pleasure and an honor. I loved your book.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for having me tonight. It's a real treat.
Oh, it's our pleasure, really. And now, Alina, I said that you were a Cuban who wrote a book, and so many Cubans have written books these days. So start with that. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born in Havana, and I grew up in the United States from a young age. But right now I actually live in London with my husband and my family, although we go back every year to Miami, so I still get my strong dose of Cuban culture there. I went to I didn't study anything to do with writing per se. I have degrees in international economics and international relations, but I always had, I think, a great love of history, which is one thing that's run throughout my life, and reading. I love to read, so now I'm doing books, so here I am.
Well, that's great. One of the things that I found interesting about your background and on your website, alinagarcialapuerta.com, and we have a link to that on the show information, but one of the things I found so interesting when you were talking about yourself is that you had an interest in Cuban history. I think all of us do. I was actually born in Cuba like you, but I grew up over here. And I think all of us, at one point, we develop an interest in Cuba. And where we came from because of our unique political situation having come here. And in your case, you have an interest in Cuba. So tell us how that interest in Cuba took you to getting or falling in love with this lady, Mercedes, that you eventually wrote a book about.
Well, it's exactly right. I think, like many Cubans, I'm intrigued by the history and the culture, and I always was on the lookout for books about it. I mean, if any types of books, I'd like to learn things about Cuba. And I came across Mercedes's name every so often, in particular on those sort of illustrated books on old Havana, those types that have a lot of photographs and tell you about, you know, life in the old part of the city. They would often reference a book that she wrote called Viaje a La Habana, Voyage to Havana, because it's a sort of a classic account of colonial life around 1840. She based it on a trip she made back to Cuba. And that book is sort of a go-to book if you want a good quote on what it's like, what it was like to live at that time and what colonial society was. So I saw references to her, but they never said much more than, you know, the quote, and then they would say something that it was a Cuban woman, but she lived in Paris. She had married a French general, and it was rather intriguing to me, the idea of a Cuban woman in 19th century Paris. And I couldn't really find out everything about her life. I could find little bits and pieces, and what I found was really intriguing. So I somehow started on this journey of finding out more about Mercedes, and eventually I think I accumulated so much information and such that I realized that it was time to either do something serious, like try to write a book, or just stop, because there was no point collecting more information on this woman.
Right. And her name is fascinating. Mercedes, why don't you say her whole name?
Well, María de las Mercedes Santa Cruz y Montalvo.
Okay.
And then she's known as, in Spanish, the Condesa de Merlin, and in French she was the Comtesse Merlin. So you even have a choice of names in different languages for her.
And she became, as you say, sort of a celebrity in Paris and in Madrid and in Cuba. Everybody knew her at the time. I mean, who? Just to give it some perspective, who is, would there be anyone today like that would have that kind of reputation in several cities? I was thinking of that lady who was an ambassador, I think Harriman was her last name.
Yes.
Who was in, you know who I'm talking about? I was thinking of that lady.
Pamela Harriman.
Because because she had all kinds of connections everywhere, and she was known in several capitals.
Yes.
Obviously, different story, but
I think she was British by birth, and then she married an American, and she became an ambassador, so she was all over the place. Yeah, it's somebody like that, and actually also really a celebrity also, because Mercedes, for the time period, was a celebrity. I mean, she was someone who would show up, who they would write up in the newspapers, accounts of her salon, of her, you know, of her private concerts, of her public benefit concerts, things like that. And people would read, like, you know, maybe what she wore, what they sang, who showed up at her parties. It was really like being a celebrity back then.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, we're going to go back and forth. Fausta will ask you a question. I'll ask you a question. But I would like to ask you one more quick question about her. In your website, you said you have an interest, or you were from the same part of town in Havana Did I understand that correctly?
In terms of being born, well,
yeah.
No, I was actually born in El Vedado, so right out,
okay.
You know, just in the newer, not newer part, because back then, Her Havana was a walled city. So no, I wasn't born there, unfortunately.
Okay, no, I misunderstood then. For some reason, I thought that had been one of the other factors that attracted you to her.
No,
course,
more the idea
with.
That we were both born in Havana, per se. We were both born in Havana, and I think we both left and then ended up in yet even a third country. I think that to me was personally very intriguing.
Oh, I see. That was your interest in that. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, let me hand it to Fausta, and then I've got a couple of other questions I want to ask you. But Fausta, go right ahead.
One thing that struck me about you did a wonderful job is how this is almost an academic book because everything is referenced and, you know, indexed and so on, but it's so readable because, first of all, you're a very good writer, but also she's such an engaging character.
She is a great character to work with, I have to say. She makes it easier, so to speak, because she offers an exciting story. But I did want to go back and make sure that what exactly happened, because that was one of the problems. There were a lot of myths. I mean, she wasn't that well known anymore, but she had been very famous. And over the years, there were layers and layers of misconceptions and, you know, legends and misleading information attached to it. And so I was never quite sure. Even she wrote memoirs also, and there were letters and there were other things. But sometimes I was never quite sure what was real or, you know, if something had really happened. And until I wanted to really make sure that I was going to tell the whole story.
And she was a character that very famous writers of the time wrote about, too.
Yes, they did. Well, people like Alexandre Dumas wrote in one of his novels, actually has a whole chapter which is set in her salon and actually has her as a character.
Wow.
And Balzac also was really intrigued by her life, so he used bits and pieces of her life to create other characters or even to reference her to give an idea or a sense of a place or a time or a person. So, this, yes, she knew them well, and they were intrigued by her life. So it was quite incredible.
Silvio, I have to change phones. I'll be calling in a couple of minutes, so
okay,
bear
no
with
problem.
Me, and I'll
no,
be right
no,
back.
No, that's fine. That'll give me a chance to move on to my next question. Let's talk
Excellent.
A little bit about her family in Havana at the time and her education. I mean, you said that she wrote and so on, so she must have been let's say fairly educated and so on. So tell us a little bit about her family in Cuba and her education.
So her family in Cuba, she really came from what is known as the Creole aristocracy. So these were the major landowners in Cuba. They were, some of them had titles, some of them didn't, but they were generally very wealthy people. They tended to really intermarry and intermingle, so it was a very close society. In Cuba, she didn't have a particularly brilliant education. That was one of her things. But when she arrived in Spain, when she was 13, her mother had already been living in Spain for many years. So and in Spain, her mother also had a very popular, what they call a tertulia, which was the Spanish version of salon, where she had some of the best, you know, poets and playwrights and artists of the day. So what she, when Mercedes got to Spain, her mother sort of started a rigorous course of education where she had to, you know, read, you know, good literature, and, you know, she had writing masters and also a lot of music. And, she mingled with some of these people. For example, she met Goya. She did her own little paintings, but she actually could interact with some, you know, one of the greatest painters of history. So both because she was given somewhat of an education once she got to Spain, but also because she was exposed to all these people, too. And throughout her life as an adult, she was constantly exposed to this very rich artistic world. She also sang. She was a great amateur soprano, really recognized. So I think all those things help. But she did have a flair for writing. I mean, her ability to write comes across very well when you read her original work. She had a nice way with the words.
Now, a couple of questions about her physical appearance, because on the cover of the book, she is a more like a brunette, I think, right? More of a what, you know,
Trigueña,
as they would say in Cuban language. But then on your website and that video that you did, she almost has blue eyes or much lighter.
No one really quite understood. She definitely had dark hair and dark eyes, for sure. But she had very fair skin, and that's the description that comes across from everyone. She was what they knew back then. That was called a Creole coloring. So they had in their mind this fair white skin, but with very dark hair and dark eyes. Now, why the blue eyes in that painting? I've never been able to figure that one out. That's a painting that's actually owned by some of her descendants, and it was actually painted by a woman painter in Paris who was a friend or slightly related to her. But why they did the blue, all I can think of is they wanted her eyes to stand out more in the painting, mm-hmm. because she did not have blue eyes.
Right.
She definitely had dark eyes.
Yeah, it just struck me, not a big deal, but it struck me when I looked at the cover of the book and the website for the book.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the video, in fact, even the singer who was on the video, I even kind of looks like the lady whose picture is there. And I kept thinking, oh, wow, this was a blonde, a pelo claro type. But it's just interesting, just a quick observation on my part just struck me. Let me send it back to Fausta, who I think is back with us now. And then I have one more question later. Go ahead, Fausta.
And one thing that struck me about her is that she had an unusual life, even for somebody of our time. You know, she was separated from her parents at an early age. She grew up with her grandmother. And then she married a man who was much older than her, but it was actually a love match from what I could gather.
Yes. I mean, the separation from her parents sailed away to Europe when she was 2 months old, and they left her there, and whether they intended to go for a very long time or just a year or two, it's unclear. But her mother never returned to Cuba, so she met her father when she was about 8 and a half, when he returned to Cuba with a military position, and she met her mother when she went to Spain when she was 13. And it's shocking for today's mind. I mean, no one can quite get around that, and everybody's expressed that to me. But even for the day, as you said, even for the time period, it was extremely unusual to leave someone for, 13 years, never to see their child. I mean, her mother was rather odd in that sense. But she was very fortunate that she had this wonderful great-grandmother, who she called Mamita, who she absolutely loved and who was just everything you would want in a nurturing, loving person. And she was part of a very large extended family. So at least, she wasn't with her parents, but at least she had that great, affection and nurturing when she was a child. But it was, all in all, a very unusual situation.
I think that's one of the reasons why she went back to Cuba later in life, too.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm sorry, could you ask that again? I didn't catch that.
It seems to me that was one of the reasons why she went back to Cuba later in life. It wasn't just because of monetary reasons, but also because she wanted to, go back to her roots, write about it, and in a way kind of find herself after all the turmoil of the Napoleonic Wars and the things that she lived through in France.
I think that she never forgot where she came from, and she knew very well who she was and where she came from, and that was something that I think gave her an enormous strength overall. And I think that she never forgot Cuba. She wrote about it in her memoirs. She would reference it in different ways, and I think she did have this longing for Cuba, because I think really it was those 13 years, that time with her mamita, that family, that unconditional love, that she really felt part of the, a wonderful world. And you're right. I mean, the rest of it was very tumultuous. I mean, it's exciting, but it was very upsetting because her world was constantly turned upside down. And I think she always did long to find or recreate that sense of belonging and of a world that she had in Cuba. And I think that's probably what attracted her to going back. And she did write a book, there were financial concerns. She did need to sort things out with her brother. There were issues with her father's estate from many years before, which had been in dispute for a long time. But the book that she produced after going to Cuba, you can't make up the sentiments that she was expressing. She just wrote so beautifully about the country and about the people, and the it's clear that there's this love and this longing for this country. It just rings through in her writing.
Yeah, that
some
is
of the books are available on Amazon too.
You can get the Viaje a La Habana, which is the Spanish
mm-hmm.
version of her book. There's a longer French one, but the Spanish version is Viaje a La Habana, and it is available in modern editions now, so you can order it easily.
Right.
I also read the one on slavery that she wrote.
She wrote, so that was actually part of, she wrote it as an essay, and it's included in the French, in the longer French version called Lavanne. But it was also published as a as an article, as an individual article. And it was quite cutting edge for the time. First of all, because no Cuban woman had ever, well, she was in effect the first Cuban writer, first female Cuban writer. And no Cuban woman had ever written anything about slavery at all. And what she did was she called for Spain to enforce the end of the slave trade. I mean, Spain had agreed years before with the English to stop the slave trade, but everybody knew that it was going on because everybody, you know, they would bribe the captain general of Cuba, and there were ships landing in Cuba all the time. So she actually says in this essay that, you know, they need to enforce the abolition of the slave trade. And, you know, that for her time and for the type of family that she came from, that step alone was quite, was a bit ahead of her time. And but she was actually helping to express outside of Cuba what some of the more, what they call kind of the, you know, the intelligentsia of Cuba were trying to say. But they weren't allowed to say that in Cuba. The Spanish government wouldn't allow anything to be published on this. So that essay, that part of the book, was never published in Cuba. It was published in France, and then it was published in Spanish in Spain. But it could not be published in Cuba. And those people, if they had published something like that in Cuba, they would have been exiled out of Cuba to Spain or something. So in a way, she was able to do it because she, you know, didn't live there. And so a lot
wow.
of the information that she used in that essay and in other parts of Lavanne, which dealt more with like economy and administration and stuff like that, she actually got from some of the really big players in Cuban intellectual history. So like Domingo del Monte and José Antonio Saco and people like that. They actually like provided her information and things. So
it's interesting.
I mean, yeah.
Go ahead, Alina. Go ahead and finish.
I thought it's an interesting thing that it was that part actually was never published in Cuba. It always was something that I find kind of amusing. But,
and I tell you, I have a family reference to what you just said about people or the Spanish government not tolerating any kind of dissent because the very first canto who moved to Cuba in the 1840s, I guess this would be my father's grandfather, I think that would
mm-hmm.
be the one. He had to leave the country because he was critical of the Spanish government. He became somewhat involved in Cuban independence, which at the time was in diapers. I mean, it was very, very
right.
small movement. But he had to leave the country because he said some things about the Spanish and had to go back. I think actually went to the Dominican Republic, and then he came back to Cuba. Well, one fascinating question that I kept coming back to from your book, you know, and I've done a lot of reading of Cuban history and have, I think I'm fairly well informed on Cuban history, given the fact that I never took a Cuban history course in Cuba. All of it has been here in the United States. I never heard of this lady before.
Yes. Well,
I mean, I'm sitting here saying, I mean, this is like an unbelievable lady. I never heard of her before. I'm sitting here saying, my goodness. I thought it was a fiction character at first.
No, she was actually well known, not just in her day, but I would say for the rest of the 19th century for sure. Actually, the first librarian of the Cuban National Library was obsessed with her, and he spent about 30 years collecting letters, papers, anything he could get on her. And he died before he could publish his biography, but it was published in 1929. I would say until the 1930s, People had heard of her. I mean, people had knew what Viaje La Habana was. Well, educated Cubans would have heard of her. And then she started slowly, I think, getting lost. Although I still found references in magazines and things, Cuban magazines, in the 1950s. But definitely now, you know, you ask anyone of Cuban descent, they pretty much never have heard of her. Few exceptions here and there, but generally speaking, what's happened is that she wasn't included as a Cuban author in part because she wrote in French. So there was this controversy of, you know, was she Cuban? You know, had she become European or, you know, what happened? But in the last, I'd say, 15 years or so, in the academic world, which is not my field, but in the academic world, there have been scholars who've kind of started writing about her, you know, her doing like literary criticism and things like that. And now she's fully accepted as, you know, part of the Cuban, you know, Cuban literature or Cuban canon or whatever you want to call it. So now they actually include her. You'll find her in anthologies and they'll reference her as, you know, one of the earliest writers and things like that. But all the time before, she definitely, you know, she wasn't officially included. So I think that's part of the reason you don't hear about her. And then people in general don't know a lot about the older part of the colonial time. I think people, they might know a little bit about the War of Independence, and then they'll know about the Revolution, and they'll know maybe a little bit about in between the 1950s or stuff. But I think most people don't look too much at you know, the time period that she lived in, let's say. They don't realize that that's when Cuba became that big sugar powerhouse that everybody kind of thinks of it as. That actually happened in her lifetime. It started about the time she was born. It started kind of slowly booming, and it was actually her family, all her different parts of her family, who were the people who kind of promoted that and helped turn Cuba into this, you know, into this huge, very wealthy colony for Spain.
Right.
So that transformation happened then.
Let me give Fausta a chance. Go ahead, Fausta.
Yeah.
And she was a contemporary of Washington, of Napoleon.
Yeah.
And yet she feels like a woman that was being perfectly comfortable in today's world. So, which makes the character even more amazing. Also, she also developed a rather successful musical career as a singer.
Yes.
A little late in life, too.
Yes, she was. No, she. If you look at her life really like that, people have asked me, well, you know, is she relevant for today? And I said, actually, if you think of everything she did, she was incredibly modern because people back then, women especially, didn't do these things. And she really succeeded, you know, as a foreigner in another country, in another language, which is amazing. And as back in those days, as you said, you know, women didn't do these types of things. So, yes, she in some ways she fits a lot more in today's world, although she was, you know, I think she had a lot of charm and she knew how to make her way in the world. With the singing, she had always been a very good singer. I mean, there's she talks about it in her memoirs even when she was a young child, and she loved music. She did study a little bit in Spain, but she always felt she wanted better, you know, better teachers, so to speak. But it was in Paris that she studied under, it was actually a Spanish voice coach. He was he's considered one of the greatest voice coaches ever, Manuel Garcia, and she studied with him. And that's one of the reasons her salon was so successful, because she had a talent. And back then, music was probably one of the most popular things in that, you know, in society. And so, and Paris was pretty much the best place for music. Everybody went there. So having, you know, her having this incredible talent really gave her access to all these talented musicians and singers, and they were very happy to go to her salon. Her salon became known as, the quote is that it was known as the passport to celebrity. So if you were like a new artist in Paris and you wanted to make your name, getting invited to sing or perform at her salon was a sure way to grab attention and make sure the best people were going to listen to you. But her own talent was also an attraction. And she also used it for good purpose because, you know, she sort of created this idea of doing like a benefit concert where she could get other people who were talented amateurs to sing with professionals. Because the amateurs, you know, people like her weren't actually, it was taboo to perform in public or get paid or sing with professionals because, you know, it wasn't seen as the right thing to do back then. It probably sounds very unusual to hear that today, but back then, you know, that's how society was. But because they would do it for a good cause, then that was considered acceptable. And they did these for amazing things. They did it for, like, Polish refugees, earthquake victims in Marnik, you know, all kinds of different causes. And they became a very popular thing in Paris to do these things.
Interesting. Let me just do a quick update. Fausta, one quick second. We're talking to Alina Garcia La Puerta, the author of the book La Bella Creole. La Belle Creole. I'm messing it up. See, I'm never good at French. I'm better in Spanish. But anyway, it's a fascinating book. I hope you can give us a few more minutes tonight. I know I told you about 30 minutes, but this is so fascinating, and I still have a topic to get to. So I hope you can give us a little extra time, Alina. Is that okay?
Yes.
All right, great. Go ahead, Fausta, and then I have a question.
How far along did you have to go for the research? I mean, you in the acknowledgments, you were in, you live in England.
Yes.
You were in Paris researching. You found a lot of material in Spain. I mean, it was a huge job.
But
I mean,
she didn't make it easy because she lived in three places, and there are three strands to her life. You know, the Cuba, the Spanish, and the French. And, you know, her life, the materials are scattered in those places. And then, obviously, in addition, there were things that I could do in England, and there were things that I could also do here in the U.S. I spent a lot of time in Miami. University of Miami has something called the Cuban Heritage Collection, which was really useful for me. And that was like my base every summer. But yes, you did really, to really tell her story, you do have to look in those places. And, you know, life is a little easier now with the internet because there are more things that are digitized, and thank goodness, for example, the French National Library has an enormous, huge amounts of newspapers from that time period digitized, so you can actually, you know, go through and you can read those in your home. You know, you don't actually have to be in Paris. But there are some things you still have to go physically into an archive because, you know, there's no other way, and just search and see what you can find. So it's a little bit like detective work, but it's so exciting when you find something, a document or something that finally, like, either explains something or just gives you, you know, a whole new path to go down to look for information. But it is like putting together a puzzle because there's all these different pieces to try to get to her life, because there's no one alive that you can ask. You know, this is a historical figure, so you have to go back into all those things.
Wow. They
and,
need to make
and,
a movie
another,
out of this lady.
Another question on the research.
They need to make a movie out of this lady, Fausta.
Oh, I would
oh,
love
no,
it if they made a movie.
Perfect.
Yeah, we'll get Fausta to play Mercedes. Fausta can be Mercedes.
I'm too old for the part.
I think all of us are, yeah, right?
But
okay.
Another question on the research. Since she was written about in various places in different ways, you know, like Massenet, remember, doesn't like her and so on, how do you sort out the actual facts of her life? Do you rely mostly on her? You know, in her family history, or how do you go about it? Because I thought that must have been difficult.
Yeah, no, it is. So that's the reason to go into the archives and look for the primary material. So she wrote her memoirs from her Cuban childhood all the way through her time in Spain. She stops when she arrives in France, but we have those memoirs. But you can't be sure 100%, you know, memoirs are accurate about things. So, and she's, one thing about her, I quickly found out, she's very bad with dates. She either doesn't give you a date, or she actually started dropping a few years off her age in her memoirs. So she tells you that she's 11 when she arrives in Spain, and she's actually 13. And then she's 15 when she's about to marry the general, but really she's 20, you know. It's like, and I think she did that because by the time that she was writing her memoirs, you know, she was a little older, but she was very beautiful and she's, you know, was very attractive, and I don't think she really wanted to give away her age. And people back then would have known, you know, the years of the fight, you know, the fighting in Spain or things like that, because that would have been almost like a contemporary thing. So if she said, well, I was 20 in 1809, you know, in this year, they would go, oh, well, then how old is she? But because of that, I had to go other places to try to verify whatever she said. And luckily, her family was important enough that there was material here and there. So her father was a major figure in Cuba. So there are actually quite a lot of documents in both Cuba and Spain. Her husband was a general, so there's, you know, military archives. Her great uncle in Spain, who's Cuban, but he was a Spanish general, became Minister of War first for the Spanish King Fernando VII, and then when Joseph Bonaparte came in for him. So he shows up in a lot of things, and he wrote a political memoir defending his choices, and then another very personal defense of his wife, who had been attacked politically for various reasons. And in that personal, you know, defense of his wife, his carta, he gave a lot of details, including, you know, times that he was with Mercedes's family. You know, he gives a lot of information in there. So there were ways to verify things that she would say in her memoirs. But I spent a lot of time doing that. And then the trickier part, too, became when she got to France, because she didn't have memoirs. And there you just have to rely on. There's some letters. That's when I was reading a lot of the newspaper accounts, a lot of the articles that would appear about her, to just kind of plot her life and her salon. People wrote about her in their memoirs from the time period, so there are several of those. You know, you just have to, like, look around in a lot of places. But because she knew so many people, her name does pop up a lot historically in that time period.
And how long did it take you to write this book, Alina?
So the research took a lot longer than the writing of the book. So
right.
The research was many years. The research was over 7 years. Wow. Although I have to say that when I signed the contract, they gave me 18 months to produce the book. Yeah. And I'd say the first 6 months, I did very, very intense research. Because in those 7 years, I wasn't doing it all intensely all the time. But 6 months, I definitely just went really, really serious on. I had already identified some things that I had just hadn't gotten around to going to. That's when I went to France and really found some of the amazing stuff. I suspected it was there, but I hadn't really done the trip yet. But then the actual writing was a year.
Wow.
to produce the manuscript to turn into the editors.
Well, we don't want to give away the book, but we want people to read it. It's a fascinating book, but. Does she go back at the end of her life to Cuba?
She does go back to visit. She goes back twice. The first time after 38 years, and that's what produces the book Viaje a La Habana, and that's in 1840. And that's the really celebrated trip. That's the one that she went back a real star. And, you know, she was in the newspapers all the time there. She performed in concerts. They through parties for her, and that's where she produced. After that, she went back to France and she produced that book. And then she did one other visit, almost towards the end of her life, and that was a longer visit, but it was very quiet. She had no publicity for that at all. She wasn't that health, you know. She was a little ill at that time and what have you. But she went with her son, and her son ended up marrying a Cuban woman. Her son actually went back, one of her sons actually went back eventually to Cuba many years later and actually died in Cuba. So it's funny. She went back to France after that. But those were her two trips to Cuba. So she
now,
never forgot
her,
it even at the end.
Right. What about her family or her descendants? Were you able to contact any of them?
Yes. I was able to contact quite a few. They're all descended from her daughter. She had a daughter and two sons who survived into adulthood. And the daughter is the only one who had descendants past well, one of the sons had children, but then no one else had. So they're all descended from her daughter Teresa, who was widowed once, so she married twice and had children with both husbands. And as far as I know, they all live in France. I mean, there may be one somewhere else, but they're all French, really. But they all, the ones that I met, were all very proud of her. They knew exactly who she was, very proud of this Cuban connection, very intrigued by this Cuban connection that they had, and definitely very proud about their ancestor. And they were wonderful about the book. They were very enthusiastic about it, and they've all received copies now, and they were all very excited, and I think they were really looking forward to it. They just wish that there would be a French version. That's what they've asked me. They want a French translation because they have lots of relatives and friends they want to read the book to. But they were wonderful, and that cover image, both those images that you refer to, the cover and the painting,
nice,
those actually belong to one of the descendants, and he's the one who allowed the photographs and everything of those. So that was wonderful, and I actually got to see them in person in France. So that
well,
was
the pictures are beautiful. I mean, she's an absolutely beautiful woman. I think the brunette picture that is on your book is really stunning. The color picture obviously shows her eyes and all that, but I think that picture on your book cover is just fascinating. I mean, that's why I said she'd make a great movie. This lady, it would be a great HBO series, wouldn't it be?
Yeah,
that
would
be an absolutely wonderful.
And I agree with you. I think that the cover image is she's more stunning in that one than in the other.
Oh, I think so. I think she looks just absolutely beautiful. I mean,
yeah,
when you look at that,
she really
the
does.
Picture, yeah, she's just an absolutely beautiful. How old do you think she was in that picture?
You know, that's
cover?
That is a very good question, because she supposedly is dressed to play Norma, to sing the role of Norma,
mm-hmm,
Bellini's Norma, and she supposedly is wearing the costume that was lent to her by one of the great opera singers of the day, who actually was one of the original in Norma. But that would actually make it the late 1830s almost, so something like that. So she's approaching, well, her 50s almost.
Wow. Well, she looks
so
beautiful.
But she, yes, because it can't be from much earlier than that, based on, you know, what we know. So, but she that was something that came up in letters and things written by other people, that she did look really good for her age, so to speak,
right,
for a long time.
No, she did. I mean, she's absolutely beautiful woman, and like a good Cuban woman, don't ask her her age, right? I mean,
oh,
that's
no, I don't think that's the one question I think she wouldn't have wanted to answer.
No, I think that she'd be very angry at you if you had revealed her age. I bet she loves, she's probably reading the book up in heaven and very happy that she didn't reveal her age.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were, actually, unfortunately, I probably did reveal too much, because I exposed how she shaved off years in her memoirs.
Well,
but,
that's true, but you didn't. It was kind of indirectly. You're forcing the reader to figure it out.
Yeah.
You're not like coming out directly
math
and saying, "There you go." You're kind of like, you know, you're forcing the reader to do a little creativity. But
exactly.
But Fausta, one more question, and we'll let Alina go.
Can we hope that you have another book in the works?
Hey, that's a great question.
I am researching something, and I'm about to put together a proposal. So I don't have a contract yet, but I'm about to put a proposal. So hopefully there'll be another book. I would
another love Cuban it. Another Cuban woman, Alina?
There would be, yes. She does have a Cuban. She is part Cuban. So yes, there's a Cuban connection. So.
Alina, what is it about Cuban women and their grandmothers? All of us have grandmothers who were influential in our lives. You know, so you probably did too, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I did, and I think that's something actually that everybody can relate to with Mercedes. The whole thing with Mamita. I don't know. I think that they always become very important. I think because we still have a bit more. I think Cubans still have a bit of that multi-generational, you know, influences in their family. So it's not just your parents, it's your grandparents or whoever else can get involved. But yeah, I think even grandmothers, that's why when I read the description of Mamita, I was like, she's like any Cuban grandmother, you know, spoiling the child and, you know, loving them and, you know, just doing all that
that's
stuff.
That's right.
So.
Well, Alina, yeah. I should tell you that Fausta is Puerto Rican, but in our show she's an honorary Cuban because she writes a lot about Cuba, and she's a real supporter of human rights. So she writes a lot about Cuba. So when we have her on the show, we think
she's
of her as an honorary Cuban. She knows actually a lot about Cuba, so she knows Cuban culture as well as any Cuban. But Alina,
Caribbean, we're neighbors in the Caribbean, so you know.
That's right.
Go.
What is that expression that we're wings for the same bird? What's that expression, Fausta?
It was a Cuban poet, a female poet from Cuba, whose name totally escapes me right now, and the phrase is. Cuba and Puerto Rico son de un pájaro, las dos alas. Cuba and Puerto Rico are of a bird, two wings. The two wings of a bird.
Yes.
And I can't
exactly
remember
right.
her name, my goodness.
No, but that was the expression I was trying to think of, because you're right. Both countries are really very, very similar. Obviously, the music, I think just about the words, the way we speak, we're very, very similar. And I've always had a very easy time relating with Puerto Ricans. I mean, it's almost like you're talking to another Cuban.
Yeah. Well, we had the Spanish influence for the same length of time as opposed to the rest of Latin America. So at least in that sense, we had it was fairly similar in lots of ways. So
that's right.
It's a great place.
Right.
Puerto Rico's a great
that's
place. Right. I love it. So
it really is. Well, Alina, thank you so much for joining us tonight. You're an absolute
you're welcome.
Treat. And I wish you the very best on your book. I'm sure it's going to do quite well. And if you if it ever becomes a movie, you tell us so that we can have you back.
You'll be the first to know. I would love it.
And definitely when you do your next book about that next Cuban lady that you're going to write about, you let us know as well, because I definitely would love to hear that.
Well, thank you so much for having me tonight. This has been wonderful, and I will definitely keep you posted.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Alina, thank you so much. Alina Garcia La Puerta, the author of a wonderful book, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to take a little break, and then we've got Fausta, and we're going to wrap it up. Alina, good night, and my best to your family.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let me bring Fausta back. Well, Fausta, this is, when you mentioned this book a couple of weeks ago, I tell you, you didn't exaggerate one bit.
It is a good read.
And what I find amazing about this lady, Alina Garcia La Puerta, is that she doesn't have a writing background. I mean, if you read her background, it's more economics and business. You don't usually think that it would be very easy for someone like that to write a book this complicated. But I think that to her credit, she took the time to do the research, like you were indicating. And she's obviously a very curious and intriguing person. And I think that it seems to me that Alina was one of those people, the more she learned about this lady Mercedes, the more she had to know, and she just couldn't stop. And the product of that is this wonderful book about this lady who, honestly, I didn't know anything about until the book came out.
Buy the book, read it, and I hope Audible does it on audiobook sometime, because it's really good. It's worth the read.
Well, I was going to say that. I was going to say audible.com if people would want to get it on audio format, but I don't know if the book is available in audio format, so that's why I didn't mention it. I would assume it's in a digital version, but I wasn't sure about the audio, so that's why I didn't mention it. But it would be a great this is the kind of audio book that you would hope that whoever does the reading it would almost have to be a woman to do the reading, don't you think?
could be. I mean, but I don't want the listeners to think that this is the equivalent of a chick flick. This is
no.
interesting character that men will probably find appealing, particularly men who are interested in
history.
You know, revolutionary era history.
No, you're right about that, and I laugh because you're exactly right. The temptation is for men to say, "Oh, this is a book about some lady." No, actually, it's a book about a lady in the middle of some very difficult times. And some very interesting times that a lot of men are interested in, like I am, you know, the Napoleon Wars and all that kind of stuff. That, and I've always been fascinated, and I'm still learning about this, but I'm fascinated about colonial Cuba. This is a time of Cuba that just fascinates me. I'm talking about the first half of the 19th century, when the independence movement against Spain was very much, you know, really not that significant. But my family was not in Cuba at that time. My family came, at least on my father's side of the family, they came in the 1840s. But this was a time in Cuba where Cuba was very Spanish, very much of a sugar plantation, and very profitable for Spain, as Alina was saying. So there were some real characters in Cuba in that time, and that's why it's fascinating to me. And this lady was obviously one of the biggest characters of all, Fausta.
It was a real surprise to me to find the character.
And how did you find the book? I'm curious. How did you come across
Alina's
the book?
PR people sent me a request asking if I wanted to review it.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So that's how you found the book. Okay.
Yeah.
And when was the book released? I meant to ask Alina that, but I didn't get to it.
I think in the last few months, in the last couple of months, it's a very new book.
Yeah. Well, one thing about the book that I would recommend to the listeners, I was talking about the cover picture of Mercedes, who, again, just an absolutely beautiful woman. And then when you go into there's a little video that they made of the book. There's a picture, and I don't know, perhaps you were off the phone when I brought this up, that in that particular portrait, she has blue eyes, whereas in the cover of the book, she looks more like a brunette with brown eyes. So Alina herself wasn't too sure about why that was, why the two paintings were different.
Yeah, that I cannot explain. So
yeah, no,
but,
no one. I mean, Alina doesn't have an explanation, and she spent, you know, a long time reviewing this lady. But Mercedes, what an amazing story! And I want to thank you, Fausta, so much for bringing this to our attention. And I guess we'll pick up our political stuff next week, and we're just going to dedicate this whole show to Mercedes.
Excellent idea.
That's a good idea. Just instead of talking about Cristina Fernandez and Argentina.
Oh my gosh! This is so much better.
This is so much better. That's right.
More interesting.
So much more interesting, frankly. So much more enjoyable. And just a quick note, if I could say, about Cristina Fernandez, she's apparently now saying that the United States is out to assassinate her or something. Did you see the story in Drudge?
Yeah, silly woman.
Oh,
that the businessmen and the international, who knows? I mean, at this point, you start reading about Cristina and you wonder whether she's completely deranged or only half deranged. So
I'm beginning to think very deranged. I'm just amazed that the people of Argentina would even elect somebody like that. But that's another issue for another time. Fausta, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you. It was a real treat to have you, and a real treat that you gave us this connection to Alina Garcia La Puerta. We have a link to the book on the show information, just like we do for Fausta's blog. And we want everybody to get this book. This is a fascinating book. I mean, I'm with Fausta. This book will keep you going for a long time. You can't put it down. One of those.
Thank you, Silvio. Always a pleasure and an honor, and this was double the pleasure and the honor. So.
Well, thank you so much. It was really nice to have you as part of this. You're such a talent, and thank you so much. And we'll talk next week. We'll talk about politics next week.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right. Good night. Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. She's the editor of Fausta's blog, and we always enjoy talking politics with her. But tonight, of course, we shifted a bit to talk about this fascinating book, La Belle Creole, which is an amazing book. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you the next time. Good night, everybody.